The Natural Hat Trick, hosted by Luke Lipinski and Craig Morgan.
Welcome into episode 187 of the Natural Hat Trick podcast alongside Jamie Eisner.
The Natty Hattie.
And on location, Craig Morgan.
How many NHL players have worn number 187?
Let's see.
Fewer than 187.
Yeah, it sounds like a referee's number. Where are you, Craig? You ever going to do
the
show
for
the
world is Craig
studio?
Morgan.
I'm in Edmonton.
Oh. How's the weather?
It's very, very, very cold, although much warmer than the last couple of days, apparently. It's all in relative terms, but to Edmontonians, apparently, this is heating up, as someone put it to me last night.
Unlike the Oilers.
Yeah, I was going to say, just like their team. How's the fan base doing up there?
I haven't talked to them, Luke, honestly, but I was on radio last night, and I think it's almost a surprise to some of the media and the fans up here how they're perceived around the league. I think they're finally getting a sense of reality of who the Oilers really are versus who they thought they were for a long time.
I heard driving in here today, I was listening to some podcast based out of Canada. I told Jamie this before the show, no kidding, no joke here, no exaggeration. The exact comment was from a paid professional. I really thought the Oilers had turned the corner last year.
and Luke and I spent the whole
was that?
Yeah, Luke and I spent the whole pre-show trying to think of what corner that they had turned.
Yeah, they're about the only afterthought in the Western Conference right now. Like, everybody else is still sort of in it. Although, we can safely say St. Louis is going to be a top three team in the Central, and they may even catch Nashville at this point. I mean,
should we pat ourselves on the back a little bit for that? Because we called the St. Louis probably making a run to the postseason before it was cool.
Yeah, just because everybody else in the West left it open.
Yeah, but still, I'll take the full credit for it. Context doesn't matter. Just what matters is I was right.
Okay, well, they're 1 point behind Vegas. And they've played three less games.
Yeah, and they have three games in hand on Nashville right now. They've won 10 in a row. I don't expect them to keep that up, but there's a really... I mean, they could get in contention for the division title here if they keep this up. This is insane.
And they're not even really winning at home yet either. They're still under regular 500 at home. So, I mean, there's still room for this team to grow. And we talked about this on the podcast last week. If all of their top players who have been up until this run underperforming across the board start to click at the right time... I mean, this team has the talent to be one of the best, if not the best team in the conference.
They are also just suffocating defense right now. We saw the game in Arizona, and, you know, quite honestly, the Coyotes didn't play that well that night, but this is a really hard team to do anything against right now. It was actually a boring game to watch, but they're doing this to a lot of teams. They're just sucking the life out of teams with how well they're playing defensively right now.
It really reinforces the notion that it's very important to win the Central at this point. Like, I don't think they'll catch Winnipeg because the Jets are still a pretty good team and they still have a pretty good cushion on St. Louis. But, I mean, that narrative of, it doesn't really matter if Winnipeg or Nashville wins the division because whoever gets second is going to play Dallas or Minnesota. Or whoever. Like, that's gone. You need to win the division because you don't want to play St. Louis in the first round.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think this underscores something that we're going to talk about at length today. With the trade deadline, I think Nashville needs to make a move here. They need a spark to this team. They need to get something going. Specifically, they need to add some offense to that lineup because St. Louis is really close to passing them. And if St. Louis has home ice in that first round, that could be a deciding factor.
Well, let's get into the trade deadline then. It will be on Monday, so this will be the last podcast we do before the trade deadline, unless we're going to do a 7-hour podcast on deadline day. Who's with me?
It's your schedule that's usually a problem.
I'll do it. I'll do a podcast
awkward
all day.
Pause.
Just live reaction.
Craig will be in Siberia that day, so we won't be able to do it live. Okay, so I'm going to throw out some names. You tell me if they're going to move, okay?
Okay. It's just a simple yes or no.
Yes.
Like, first thing that comes to mind.
Is I don't know an option?
Yes, I guess, for you, because you don't have proof that they're moving. Mark Stone.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow, you heard it here first. Craig guarantees that Mark Stone moves. Matt Duchene.
No.
I don't know on that one. Okay. I don't know.
And then Panarin, we all assume, is moving.
Yeah, I think they have to move Panarin.
Okay.
But they have to get the right return. You can't blow this. You really can't blow this, as we've talked about before, for an asset of that sort of value.
Let's go back to Stone first. I mean, he is somebody that's been on Ottawa for his whole career. So I mean, if the Senators fans are already pretty jaded, and they have every right to be, but if they're going to lose, if they're going to lose one of these guys, do you think they have a preference between keeping Stone or Duchesne?
Fans or the organization?
Well, let's start with fans, since they're being alienated by the day.
I think fans would probably prefer Mark Stone. My guess, based on just the way he's been talked about by the media there, that the organization would probably rather have Matt Duchesne.
How much of that is the fact that they traded a lot to get Matt Duchesne and they sort of have to save face?
I mean, that could be part of it, but he's also a center.
He's also a center, yeah.
Jinx.
Well, why don't we just repeat each other?
All right, well, I mean, if Mark Stone, that he's not quite Panarin, but he's the sort of player that if he really gets dealt in the next few days, that could change the landscape of the playoff picture too.
Did you read the Elliot Freeman report that the Senators came in with a 5-year deal at an AAV of $10.5 million, which would be a Patrick Kane number, granted for shorter term, and it was denied?
If that's true,
then there's nothing Ottawa can do.
I don't know. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, he's good.
He is not a $10 million player.
Max term, right? Instead of trying to, you know, get another contract at age 32. But, man, that's a lot of money for a guy who's not worth Patrick Kane. And granted, I know the cap goes up, so you can't do it that way. Patrick Kane signed his deal a long time ago. But I'm not sure I'm handing out $10.5 million to Mark Stone.
No, that's $2 million to me, AAV, over what I would pay Mark Stone. And I mean, somebody would probably give him in the 9 range, but I guess if you really don't want to be in Ottawa anymore, then I guess it doesn't, you know, that extra money doesn't really matter as much.
Well, and that's another factor here. I wonder about with Ottawa when there's so little faith in ownership up there. What do they do? How do they manage to hang on to any of these pieces at this point when everybody knows what's going on there with ownership?
It's a shame too, because I mean, if you look at, If money wasn't an issue and they had kept Erik Karlsson and now they have Mark Stone and Matt Duchesne and Thomas Chabot, like they're not a good team yet, but with Brady Tkachuk drafted, I mean, they could turn it around within a year or two and be a playoff contender if they still had Erik Karlsson, but instead they're going to probably lose all of these guys except Chabot.
Yeah.
And Mikhail Bodker.
Yeah, because it looks like Cody Ceci, which again, Cody Ceci is like one of the most divisive players among how fans view him on either side there. But, you know, his name has been thrown out there. But at least they have their first round pick, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They do have a decent prospect base, too. So, I mean, there are a few guys in their prospect pool that are decent players, too. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch, because if this thing falls apart because of ownership, boy, that's just a damning situation opinion of the ownership situation. And I don't think it's any surprise to anyone at this point that there's so little faith in what's going on up there, but we could watch it all fall apart now. And obviously Erik Karlsson was the first domino in all of this.
They do have a good prospect pool, but as a fan, you sort of lose faith in your team. If you're going to develop prospects and then trade them to playoff contenders every year, every other year, like you sort of lose confidence and certainly patience in waiting for those guys to develop. So not a great situation in Ottawa. As far as Columbus, I heard an interesting argument over the weekend that they could potentially trade Panarin and then sort of repurpose some of the pieces they get back for him, or just keep those guys and still try and make a playoff run this year. Like, get guys back that are going to help them right away. Is that, you think that's on the table for them?
Oh, I would think so. I would think they're considering all options. You have, like, as we just discussed, you got to get significant return for this piece. So if it becomes players that are, you know, ready to contribute right now, so be it. Or if it becomes a, you know, boatload of assets and that's the way you want to go, whatever your decision is, whatever the offers are, you have to make sure that the return is right. It's a really weird situation, and we've discussed this before, but it's a weird situation for a team to be in a playoff spot, really battling for a playoff spot, and yet looking to sell off two of its best assets.
Yeah, and I mean, they're in a playoff spot. What with 69 points, they're tied with Pittsburgh and Montreal, and then Carolina's 1 point back. So if they trade Panarin and don't get a guy that's going to help them this year, they probably will miss the playoffs. They're 1 point out of missing the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that, though. They would have to execute several deals on top of each other. You'd have to trade, because I don't think a team that's trading for Panarin is giving you many quality assets off their NHL roster right now, because they're trading for Panarin because they're wanting to make a run. So then you would have to trade the assets you'd get from there to teams that are out of contention for their guys. But then at that point, I mean, sure, if you can get a really good deal there, but even would you even pay 90 cents on the dollar for a player like that? When you for players that would help you now when you're destined for to be out in the first round anyway? I mean, I just to me, I think I know it sucks. It's a terrible situation to be in, but you like we said all along, you've got to nail this Panarin trade. And if you're trading any valuable assets that you get from either a Panarin deal or a Bobrovsky deal or both to try to what win two playoff games? I don't see what the point is.
I mean, they were close against Washington last year. If you remember, they probably should have taken Washington out in the first round. They've never won a playoff series. I do think there's more value to getting out of the first round for Columbus than there is for a team like Tampa or something. But I'm not mortgaging my future to maybe win one playoff series.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all depends on what the value of the pieces you could bring back are. But they're not going to replace Panarin.
Let's do a quick update. Jamie, is Philadelphia going to make the playoffs?
Nope.
Okay.
Been pretty consistent on that.
Yes, you have. Craig, you sort of touched on this. Nashville is a contender that it sort of feels like needs to make a move right now. And I know you've said in the past, and we've all agreed with you, that Panarin would be the ultimate because he really fills a need on that team more than probably any other team. What of these other contenders do you feel like still have to make a move in the next few days?
I mean, have to... you know, I look at Calgary right now, and I just saw them obviously up and close with the game against the Coyotes yesterday. But you know, there's talk that they're going to add that they might be in on Mark Stone. Actually, to me, when I look at, I worry about how well that team can defend. Still, I look at their PK. I know they've scored a lot of shorthanded goals, but that's not a good PK. That's a concern going into the playoffs. And usually, a penalty killing unit is a reflection of how well you defend as a team. I think that they could look to make a move there to improve themselves, whether that's up front or on the back end. I know that they have a pretty good blue line as it is, but they are not defending that well. So I think if they want to make a mark, they need to make another move here, especially with San Jose playing so well in this division. I wonder about Winnipeg. You know, there's a lot of talk. It sounds like they're going to be aggressive. I don't know if they need to be aggressive. They should be wise. They should be smart with what they do because they're a very good team, and they're certainly a cup contender right now as they are constituted. But I see that as another team that's probably going to be active in the trade deadline.
Yeah, and they've been linked to Mark Stone as well. And all, yep. all the rumors last night of all the meetings, you know, the GMs went off to the side and all that fun stuff. One team I also would keep an eye on is the Islanders, because I still think that's a team that has, because of the division they're in and because of the way they're winning games, has a clear path to the Eastern Conference Finals. And that team still has a lot of areas where it can improve. And I think that's a team that might, maybe not on the upper echelon guys, but in that kind of that second tier of players available in the free agent market, in the trade market, they might go after those guys, because I do think they could make a run here and win a couple playoff series.
Do you really?
I do. I really think that.
They got to be careful, don't they?
Yeah, you can't give up.
How much do you believe in the Islanders?
I think they're going to the Eastern Conference Finals if I pick today.
Ooh.
I think they're a better team than Washington, Columbus, and then whoever's going to end up being in the wild card, whether it's Carolina and or Columbus or Pittsburgh there.
You can't play Columbus and then Columbus.
Well, whatever. Columbus. Well, they can't play Columbus in the second round because they won't be there.
I don't trust the Islanders, but I mean Jamie's not totally wrong. Their path is, like, if you look, Washington's goal differential, and you read whatever you want to this, but the Washington Capitals have a goal differential of plus 11. I mean, they have not been good. And Columbus, I still don't think Columbus is going to make it. Right now, the Islanders would play Pittsburgh in the first round. That would go seven games, I think, because Pittsburgh is so wildly inconsistent from night to night. I want to see Carolina make the playoffs. I just don't want to see them make it at the expense of the Penguins. But we'll get to Carolina in a second. It's funny you bring up the Islanders, because Elliot Friedman had I heard him do an interview where he said the four teams that you really need to watch out for at the trade deadline are Calgary, Winnipeg, Nashville, and then the Islanders as the fourth team. And he doesn't usually just throw stuff on the wall and see if it sticks. Like, he's usually hearing stuff from people around the league. I don't know what to make of the Islanders. I really don't. Aside from their path, who's winning them games other than Matthew Barzal right now?
Their goaltending is winning them games, and their coaching is winning them games, and that's a formula you can carry into the postseason. We have seen it before. I don't think they're a cup. I don't think they're a cup team because Tampa Bay exists and Toronto exists. They're not better than the three teams in the Atlantic, but right now, again, I don't think they're gonna. I don't think they should go after the tippy top guys on the trade market because, again, you do that when you think you're going to win the cup immediately.
So is that above elite tippy top?
The tippy top guys. They're not a team that's going to win the cup immediately, but I could see them getting. You know, if you trade a second round pick for a second line or third line forward that can help you, I think that's a move you make because you can win a couple playoff series.
Yeah. And like you said, because of the division that they're in. But, I worry about this, the long-term viability of this. Are we going to see this from the Islanders on an annual basis? Is this a one-off because of circumstance? You know, it's almost like it's an us-against-the-world mentality, kind of like the Coyotes had way back when Dave Tippett was here, where you had really a roster that had no business having as much success as it does. But they've got a coach, the right coach, the right situation, the right mentality. They've all bought in. How long can you sustain that sort of thing? I don't know if this is sustainable. I don't know if we're going to see the same thing from the Islanders next season. I'm sure they would love to have a head of steam going into their new arena. It would certainly help them. But, I just don't know how much to believe in this team yet. My gut feeling is that we're not going to see them sustain this over the next couple of years.
Let me read through some of their top scorers for everybody, okay? Matthew Barzal has 50 points. They have nobody on the team that has broken the 20-goal barrier yet, and still, they're in first place in the Metro. After Barzal, it's Josh Bailey, Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Ryan Pulock, Jordan Eberle, who has 13 goals and 13 assists. Casey Cizikas, Valtteri Filppula is still in the NHL. That's
too many consonants in his name.
That does not sound like a team that would strike fear into the heart of the opponent, and yet they're winning games. Like Jamie said, it's goaltending and Barry Trotz. I mean, they should be active. They just need to be smart about it because the formula they have, I don't know that a guy like Panarin would help them as much as he would help a team like Nashville, whereas just sort of rounding out the second and third lines could make them dangerous. I mean, if they get to the second round even, I think it's a very successful season for them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I still think they're going to win this division, which is an amazing accomplishment considering what we thought they would be once Tavares signed elsewhere.
Nobody else seems to want to win the division. It'd be great to watch Barry Trotz take out the Capitals.
That would be interesting. I do think that we are going to see the Islanders play playoff games in two different arenas. So they're going to get out of round one.
Don Cherry. Discuss. Well, because I'm looking at Carolina, they're a point behind. They're not in the playoffs right now.
You know why they're not in the playoffs right now?
Because they're a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, because they're a bunch of jerks celebrating too hard.
But they're 1 point behind Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Montreal. So if they just keep winning, they're going to make the playoffs. I really want to see them in there, and now I really want to see them playing a Canadian team in the first round. I don't know if that's possible, but how great would that be?
Yeah, it would be fantastic. Look, there is an argument to be made. I'm not saying that Don Cherry made it, that you know, you need to respect the game. You don't want to turn it into a clown show. But these are different types of markets. You have to try different things when you are marketing to a different fan base like Carolina's. It has been wildly successful. And I don't even want to go so far as to say that if you do something and it's successful to the fan base, it's necessarily good for the game, because popularity does not always equate to quality. But I don't have any problem with what they're doing. It's harmless fun that they're having at the end of games, whether it's playing duck duck goose or playing mock baseball or whatever it is. It's fun for the fans. What's wrong with this, really? They're not disrespecting the game. There's really nothing wrong with what they're doing. And I think the best tweet that I saw on Don Cherry is, "Put grandpa in a home."
Well, wow, that's harsh. And that was from Ron McLean. He's not the only one that has said this. He just took it to a new level over the weekend on that was on Coach's Corner, I believe. And I can't help but wonder if the Toronto Maple Leafs were doing this, if people would be as up in arms about it. You know what I mean? Or even if it's not a Canadian team, if it was like Buffalo or the Rangers or something. But when you add the extra factor of it is a team in the South U.S. that is celebrating. Like, I mean, they are definitely going over the top with the celebration, but at least from my outside perception, it seems organic. It's not like some marketing ploy that their sales team put together. The players and the coaching staff, I guess, is in on it. I mean, that's their fans love it. Fans of a lot of other teams love it. I don't know what's wrong with having fun in sports.
This just frustrates me to no end of the criticism that they're getting. It's harmless. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fun to see. I think sometimes in sports we get so wrapped up in what the tradition of the game. You have to respect the game, and this is not disrespectful to the game of hockey. The game is over. They won. I think Don Cherry said something. They should do it before they win.
That was
some weird thing in his like LSD trip that he was taking on the air on Hockey Night in Canada. It's just, if you don't like this, then you don't like fun. I'm sorry. I can understand. There's a reasonable argument to say, I prefer my sports teams don't do that. But if you're actually legitimately angry about this, you really need to check your priorities.
Speaking of trips, I sometimes feel like I should be tripping when I'm looking at Don Cherry's coats.
Yeah. What do you have, like seahorses on the one when he was telling that teams were being too superfluous after games? Okay.
It does sort of take away from your credibility.
By the way, just not to change the topic, but I'm going to. Just because I have Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts article up. He says, barring a massive swerve, Duchesne will be traded, and Columbus has made an offer.
Oh.
So that's interesting to think about as we talk about pieces that they might get if they move Panarin.
Right.
I don't get that at all, but that's that.
Well, I guess Columbus's thing is they would be willing to pay Panarin in theory. He just doesn't want to live in Columbus. So maybe they feel like if they got Duchesne, they would just turn around and
possible.
Give him that money.
Also, you mentioned the Stars as a potential stealth team for Artemi Panarin.
Yeah, I saw that. And that's just, again, that's bizarre
that.
To me.
I
that,
don't get that.
That smacks of Dallas doing the wrong thing again.
They've done that before.
Dallas is not a contender. I don't see that happening long term. He's not going to sign there. I don't see any sense in that whatsoever. It was interesting also that Elliot thinks the Islanders are one of the teams that has the best shot of signing Panarin long-term. And I guess if you live in New York, that may be part of the attraction. But it's still the Islanders. And as we talked about, I'm not sure that this thing is going to sustain long-term. It sounds like he's putting himself in another situation with a team where he's really not going to contend for cups.
It's hard to tell if he wants to play in New York, the Islanders are a better team than the Rangers, certainly. I can't tell if he cares more about money and location than winning. It's sort of that's the picture that has been painted about him. So, I mean.
Right. The other thing is when we read those teams, you know, Elliot's just talking about the teams that might trade for him now that would have the best chance of signing him. It doesn't even discuss where he might go, you know, once he reaches free agency. Which opens up a whole other group of teams. Of course, the Florida Panthers have been tied to a hot pursuit of both those players, Bobrovsky and Panarin. And the Blackhawks are still out there. Look, you could go back and play with Patrick Kane again, and I'm sure he would be very happy about that.
Is Kane any good? I haven't really heard much from him in the last 10 minutes.
He's okay, huh? Is it an 18-game point streak now, longest of his career? Is that where we're at now?
He's not quite as good as Dylan Strome, but he is pretty good. Based on what I've seen. We'll get to Chicago in a second. I want to go back to Carolina before we finish it up. They are selling shirts now that say bunch of jerks.
As they should. Awesome. Steer right into it.
The actual team. That's fantastic. Do you guys think if it would never happen in Toronto because that's such an old school city and there's so much pressure on the hockey team, but if this was happening in Vancouver, would it still be getting the same angry reaction from people that it's getting taking place in Carolina?
Oh, I think it would.
Yeah, I actually do.
I think they're just a certain segment of people that just don't believe that this is what hockey should be about. You know, it's these people feel to me like the baseball purists, right? Mm-hmm. There's a certain way that the game is going to be played. I have decided it. I have decreed it. And that's all there is to it.
It's a fun way to go through life, I bet.
Yep.
Right.
It's the Brian McCann way of living life.
Wow, that's an obscure baseball reference on a hockey podcast.
For the two people that got that listening.
The... the situation now with Carolina, if they're in a best of seven series, I could see it getting that much more irritating depending who they're playing. I mean, it's one thing, hey, we lost a game in January and the Carolina Hurricanes are celebrating and we're already leaving the arena. But if you go down 3-1 in a series to them and they're celebrating
How about they win at home in like a game six? Handshake line and then what's the routine after the handshake line?
Jamie, are you writing off the Sabres and the Flyers? I know you've written off the Flyers. Are you writing off the Sabres as well?
Yeah, I'm writing off everybody that's so not Carolina, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Montreal in that for the final three spots.
In Montreal's the interesting one to me. You know, there's talk of what they might do at the deadline. Well, Bergeron has said he's not into rental players. I think that's the right approach for Montreal. I'm not convinced this team is going to make the playoffs. I have seen Montreal a few times. I'm not convinced that they're very good. And I'm not convinced that they're going to make the playoffs. They've been struggling a little bit lately, too. Carolina's only a point behind them right now in the standings. I could see the Canadiens dropping out of this entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all tried to, at least in our minds, have knocked Columbus out. But if they do make some moves for whether it's a Kevin Hayes or a Matt Duchene, they'll probably have enough at that point to sustain, because I don't know if they're going to move Bobrovsky or a team like Montreal. But I do think that last wildcard team in the East is going to be a lot worse than what it looks like right now. It's going to be, I'm not going to say they're what the Western wildcard picture is. Final team that gets in.
After the start they had.
And Buffalo.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah. I'm not ready to
Montreal's right on the cusp now. Right on the cusp now. They're just not playing that well.
I'm not totally ready to write Buffalo off just yet, but they are 6 points back and they're going to have to start jumping multiple teams. Looking at Montreal too, Max Domi's still having a great year, but pretty sure his stats over the last 25 games are actually worse than Galchenyuk's. At this point, which I guess is a reminder that trades aren't finalized in terms of who wins or loses after a month and a half.
And also roles are different. I mean, we went on that little diatribe last week about Dylan Strom and the difference between how he is being used in Chicago and how he would have been used in Arizona, and the differences there, too.
All right. Right. Boy, playing with Alex DeBrincat doesn't suck, does it?
It does not.
My God, what a season he's having. What a season Alex DeBrincat is having.
He's a great player.
Well, we all want to talk about Strome, so here, let's just go with it now. Chicago wins again. Craig, does Chicago only play Detroit and Ottawa? Because I know last week...
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I know a lot of people are looking at them climbing in the standings, and give it to the Blackhawks. They're winning those games, but they sure have played a lot of bad teams recently. When they meet the good teams like Boston, they lose. But when they face these horrible teams, they're winning these games, which is pretty much what you have to do to sneak into the wild card, I guess, at this point, because we've all seen what's happening in the Western Conference. But when I look at the Blackhawks, they're exciting. They're fun to watch. But are they going to do any damage once they get in? What's going to happen when they face Winnipeg in the first round? I don't see that ending well for the Blackhawks. But they definitely are a lot more fun that they've taken the reins off the offense and just let these guys basically go. Patrick Kane's been brilliant recently. DeBrincat's been brilliant. Jonathan Toews is a point-per-game player, which is as much an indication of what's happening in the league as anything. So they've got a lot of nice things going offensively. But when you are barely beating the Ottawa Senators in a shootout at home, I'm not sure you're feeling really good about yourselves.
I think the Blackhawks get in. I don't think they do any damage. But if you look at this in the context of it, they are 25-35. Like, the West is so bad. They are 25-35. I guess they're technically 25-26-9. But they've lost 35 of their 60 games this year. And they're probably going to make the playoffs. Like,
can't defend.
It's just more of a product of the bottom of the West is just so putrid right now that the Blackhawks look exciting. They're not going to beat these top teams in the West. They're nowhere near those top teams.
They've won 9 of their last 11, but here's the teams they've beat most recently: Ottawa, New Jersey, Detroit, Vancouver, Edmonton, Minnesota, Buffalo. Coming up again, Detroit, who I know they only play them twice, but they've played them twice now in the last week and a half. It really feels like they've played Detroit 17 times this season. But at the same time, they're taking care of business against those teams. I mean, they've got Detroit, Colorado, Dallas, Anaheim, and the Kings coming up in their next five games. Would it shock you if they went 4-0-1 in those five games?
It would not.
No, it would not.
And I know Jamie and I are on the same page that they're getting in at least over Minnesota, if not over Dallas, which could still leave a playoff spot open in the West. Craig, if you come around that Chicago's a playoff team?
Not quite yet, but with their schedule, I could definitely see it happening. I don't think it's good for the long-term of this team. I don't see what making the playoffs for the Blackhawks and going out in the first round, what that does for them, other than maybe validate what Stan Bowman said at the beginning of the season, that he believes this is a playoff roster. Of course, they're going to be an awful team making the playoffs because the West is awful at the bottom, but it could validate him and help him keep his job. But aside from that, I don't understand what this really accomplishes for the team in the long term.
Feels a little eerie to like the Chiarelli 1 year playoff run in Edmonton, right? Where they get to stay around for a couple extra years, make a handful more terrible trades of guys you end up waiving less than 2 months later, and then all of a sudden you're right back to where you were years ago.
And that's the disturbing thing here. Look, they do have a couple good defensive prospects coming up, so maybe their blue line will improve, although Duncan Keith ain't getting any younger, and there's not a lot there. I'm not sure why they've had Henry Jokiharju down in Rockford for so long. That's been bizarre to me during this stretch. But you've seen what Stan Bowman has done to this roster. I was talking about this with a couple other people. Imagine if they hadn't swung the trade.
A different podcast.
Aaron Prasad. What's that?
Were you on a different podcast?
Are you cheating on us, Craig?
I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Don't you have 9 wives in 9 different time zones?
And this is not about me. It's not about me.
All right. Sorry, Craig.
Or Luke's inability to understand how time zones in North America work.
This isn't about me for sure. Craig, go ahead and make your report that is apparently recycled because you used it with other people already.
Jeez, it just feels so less important now. But imagine if they hadn't made the trades we've talked about. Imagine if they had Artemi Panarin instead of Brandon Saad. Imagine if they had Nicholas Chalmerson instead of Connor Murphy for a team that needs to defend. Imagine if, well, we can't do anything about the Brent Seabrook contract at this point. But those are three things that you look at. And when John McDonough, the president of the team, comes out and says he's definitely the guy to lead us into the future, with that on your resume, how can you say that this is the guy we want to do it? Maybe they're looking, oh, look at the trade he just swung for Dylan Strome. It's working out really well for us. Okay, but what about his track record? What about the fact that he managed to dismantle a team that probably should have won 5 cups instead of 3? How do you let this guy lead you forward? And if they make the playoffs, that may be enough for Stan Bowman to save his job and for John McDonough to say, yeah, he's our guy.
It does feel like they're playing for Stan Bowman right now. I mean, that's best case, they somehow get Calgary in the first round, and I could see them potentially beating the Flames.
I still don't.
It's just because Calgary's been so – that'd be a fun series. Because every game would be like 7-6.
It would be a fun series, but I just the Blackhawks can't defend against anybody.
I don't know that I would pick them against Calgary, but it's not inconceivable that they could stun Calgary or whatever. Maybe get to the second round, but that to me seems like the ceiling for Chicago this year. And yet, I think Craig's right. I mean, if they make the playoffs, I think Stan Bowman comes back.
Absolutely, he does. If they do,
pin everything on
when they do.
Yeah, when they do. Patrick Kane, 36 goals. We don't have the bell.
But we said combo. I can't ring the bell because I said they're going to make the playoffs.
I know.
That's not a dig on them.
But we have to be able to ring the bell at some point on this show.
Okay. Stan Bowman.
Yes. Ah, that felt good.
Just his name. Yeah, really. Just say his name and I'm good.
Okay, good.
That'll set me off.
Patrick Kane has 36 goals and 90 points. He's second in the NHL now with the 90 points, 9 behind Nikita Kucherov.
9 behind Nikita Kucherov, who just had a 5-point night.
Who somehow had more points than Patrick Kane last night.
Yeah, it's true. He actually widened the gap. Kane, does he at least get Hart Trophy? Is he at least a finalist in Vegas?
I think if they make the playoffs, absolutely. Maybe even if they don't make the playoffs, but he's just had a remarkable season, so I don't know. I don't know how you leave him out of the conversation at this point with what he's doing.
I think he has to be. Who's the third guy, though?
Well, McDavid.
McDavid?
You assume gets...
I mean,
almost every year, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you write Kucherov and Kane, I mean...
Well...
Who else?
I mean, I would have Gaudreau up there, maybe even ahead of McDavid, just because the Oilers are trash this season. I know it's not McDavid's fault.
Yeah. Braden Point deserves some love there, too.
Yeah, but he won't get any.
But yeah, because you can't. It's against the rules to have two teammates. So
yeah, and you can't be like a sort of under the radar, even if you're a great player on like Tampa, and get voted in as a Hart Trophy finalist.
And even though the goals,
there's really not a defenseman or a goalie that belongs in this conversation this year, is there?
No, there isn't. And I can't really make a strong argument even for Ovechkin, even though he's going to lead the league in goals again. I just feel like he's, when you're 30 points back.
Yeah,
I know you scored 42 goals, but you're 30 points back of Kucherov.
All the Colorado guys have dropped out, right?
Yeah, because that team doesn't win anymore, apparently. They won the other night, but still.
Did Colorado get contracted out of the league and we don't realize it?
I think to the point Craig's been making on the show for a while now, at some point when teams adjust and you have the skill to shut down or at least come close to shutting down that top line, Colorado has literally nothing else that's going to beat you.
Right. You make those guys like maybe around point per game guys, right? Just take a little off their production, a little edge off that line. And that's pretty much what's happened to Colorado, because those guys are still producing at a decent rate, at a good rate, but it's not at an otherworldly rate. And that's what was sustaining them earlier in the season.
Kucherov's on pace for like 124 points this year.
Yeah, it's insane what he's doing.
So it certainly looks like it'll be Kucherov, Kane, Gaudreau, McDavid. Three of those four will be the finalists.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing
somebody. 135 points.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, that's what he's on pace for.
Math is fun. That's 124 and then some.
That is how numbers work, Luke. See, congratulations.
So I wasn't technically wrong.
Next is time zones.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. That's another story.
Just as an aside here, since we're talking about Calgary and Edmonton, it is going from one city to the other. I was in Calgary yesterday and in Edmonton right now. It is a bizarre reality that you're in Calgary and you're in the Saddle Dome, which is, wow. Calgary needs a new arena. They really need a new arena. As badly as anybody in the league, Calgary needs a new arena. They're in that situation. I think it was opened in 1981, and it is, as we know, has been flood damaged up to the 10th row. And it's a really beat up place. So they're playing in this just old barn, and yet Calgary has this terrific team that's, you know, considering making moves to contend for a cup. You come up to Edmonton with this absolute palace they're playing in. Beautiful arena, one of the best in the league. They've got the best player in the world, and yeah, they're not going anywhere.
No.
And there's no hope of them going anywhere anytime soon. It's a weird contrast here in Alberta.
It is an absolute waste of an arena and a waste of a McDavid and a waste of a Draisaitl. And that's pretty much what the Oilers are at this point. Specifically, a waste of a McDavid, because I don't know what Buffalo would be doing with him. I would assume they'd be a playoff team. The Coyotes certainly would be a playoff team, because they're still somehow only a couple points out of a playoff spot. Let's get back to Strome, though, for a second. What he's done with Chicago, I feel like on this show we all said, look out for him to produce on that, at the time, line with Kane and DeBrincat. Certainly he's still with DeBrincat right now. This is the best possible case for him, the best situation, and he's cashing in. But I didn't expect this much. He's basically a point-per-game guy now.
Yeah, I don't think
he is. And that's, go ahead, Jamie.
No, so I didn't.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, I will.
Why don't you guys both go ahead?
Please, go ahead.
I don't think any of us expected, obviously, a point-per-game production, but we expected him to produce, because when you're playing on a line like that, on a team that has offensive upside, you can score points. And he has shown the ability, as we broke down a couple weeks ago, he has shown the ability at times to actively get involved in the plays and to create his offense. And he's also a lot of times kind of hanging around other players, creating offense around him, and he's benefiting from it. It's equal parts of both. And to me, that's just, I don't know what this looks like long term. I don't know if he's going to play with DeBrincat next year or beyond that. I don't know if teams are going to adjust to him. I don't know if they're going to ask Dylan Strome to do more. They're going to say, okay, we liked what you did this year. Let's add a little bit more to your plate in terms of your all-around game. Maybe does that change how he's able to play? Does he struggle in that role or excel in that role? We don't know. There's so many things up in the air long term. But right now, it's hard to argue that he could be playing any better than he is right now.
He gets too good, and Stan Bowman trades him for Brandon Saad's brother, if that's possible. The thing with Strome, I would say, and I know we've said it on
cowbell.
The show before.
Cowbell, please. Cowbell, please. Thank you.
Calling for the cowbell from 2,000 miles away, or however far away. Are you 2,000 miles away right now?
Do I need to look this up?
I have not done the mileage. All I know is I'm in the northernmost city in the NHL. And it took a long time for the sun to come up this morning.
Is it? Well, as I told you, Peter Chiarelli traded the sun away for a third pairing defenseman.
Yes, I liked that tweet. That was good.
Thank you. The thing about Strome that you have to remember is it's not as simple as, hey, put him on the line with some good players and he'll pick up secondary assists because he touched the puck and then these guys went off and did all the work. This is what he's good at. He makes offense happen. He's just not a great skater, and he's not great defensively. He's good in the faceoff circle, and he's a playmaker, and he's got that sort of vision when you get in the attack zone that you can't really measure, I don't believe, with regular stats or analytics. He has natural, I hate to use the buzz term of hockey IQ, but he really is the definition of it. When you get into the offensive zone, He knows where to put the puck. He sees the game. We've all talked to him. We've all interviewed him. I've talked to him right off the ice in the first intermission of a Coyotes game and asked him about a play, and he told me where every single player was on the ice, and it was a three-second play. So
yeah, he's a smart player, no doubt about that.
So I just there's more to it than just putting him on that line. But go ahead.
Yeah, and there's a lot to consider from a Coyotes perspective too. Now, he never really got the opportunity to play with the type of skill you could argue that there is none on the Coyotes roster. Maybe he could have played with Clayton Keller, although that would have presented some interesting defensive issues for the Coyotes that those two played together. They would have had someone else on that line that could take care of defensive responsibilities. But that aside, he never got the opportunity to play with the Coyotes' top skill. So you have to wonder about that as well. What might he have done had he been allowed that opportunity? Why couldn't he win Rick Tocchet's trust? Was it a case here, I guess, of trying to fit players into a system that you want to play rather than adapting to the personnel that you have on your roster? Now, there are a lot of people that believe you should do the latter. You should take advantage of the skill sets of the players you have already. The Coyotes have gone all in some ways in playing the style that Rick Tocchet wants to play. We don't know what Nick Schmaltz is going to be in. I don't care about what scouts said the upside was for these two players and using that as an argument against this trade. Who cares? Because scouts are wrong all the time. Yeah. If Nick Schmaltz pans out because he has the speed to play through the middle and play the style that Rick Tocchet wants to play, maybe this is a trade that helps both teams, and that's fine. But we can't evaluate that yet. But there are some things that give you pause when looking at the Coyotes. Did they try too hard to fit a player into the system rather than adapting to his game? And if he continues to do what he does, you know, even as Jonathan Toews ages, boy, then you're looking at the specter of the Coyotes trading away a top line center, a number one center, which is what they've been searching for all this time. Wouldn't it be ironic if they had that guy, they did all the development for him, and then he panned out as that number one center somewhere else?
It's such a complicated scenario because, I'm sure you guys have this too. I have people tweeting me asking me if John Chyka gave up on Strome too early. And that's just, I don't think it's Chyka. I mean, I think it's what you just said, Craig. If it turns out that they gave up on Strome too early, in my mind, that's more of a Rick Tocchet thing because he wants players to fit his specific system. But where it's complicated is that system has kept the Coyotes in playoff contention this year when they've lost like half their roster. So It's way too early to know for sure. I mean, Schmaltz was producing basically a point per game, too. Would he have 14 points in 17 games when he got hurt, and he wasn't playing with Patrick Kane or Alex DeBrincat? So it's
right.
We're not going to know until next year or maybe the year after. But the thing that has to be scary if you're a Coyotes fan is what you just said about Strome if he ever becomes a number one center. Then you have concerns.
And I don't think you'll even find that out until Jonathan Toews is in decline and Dylan Strome is asked to assume that role when he doesn't have Jonathan Toews in the lineup drawing attention. You know, how much does that impact him as well? That's a huge factor as well, not just playing with DeBrincat, the fact that Toews is in that lineup. But then getting back to the Coyotes and what we were talking about, you absolutely have to consider the impact that Rick Tocchet had on this trade. This is not all John Chyka. On the flip side, John Chyka is the president of hockey operations. He's the GM. He's the guy who makes the call. So if he steps in and says, wait a minute, why are we trying so hard to force players into a system rather than adapting to what we've got? That's the responsibility of an executive too, right? You have to make that hard call. You have to be the ultimate decision maker. So if you're allowing your coach to dictate too much, that's potentially a problem too. But again, we don't know on all of this. It is way too early to judge any of this. There are way too many factors that we need to see play out over the next season plus.
Do you think there's even any concern right now with the Coyotes about, I mean, because Schmaltz, like every other Coyote, got hurt, and he was producing. He was basically producing, again, at the level Strome's producing. He just didn't play as many games.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do you think they look at what he's doing in Chicago and have some concern that they may have made the wrong trade, or is it just, it's so early in the process? I know people want to have the knee-jerk reaction, and Strome's probably going to make the playoffs, and Chicago scores 8 goals now a game, so he's certainly going to be a part of it. It feels like Coyotes fans just forgot that Schmaltz was ever even here. Like, it feels like the perception of the trade is they traded Strome, and they forget about Perlini too, but just Strome for nothing.
Yeah, throwing Perlini in is still, to me, a little bit of an odd thing. Why you had to give up extra, I don't know, to get Nick Schmaltz, that was a little bit odd to me. But I guess when you look at past production, that you can justify that move a little bit. And Perlini really hasn't done anything in Chicago. It's been really hard to watch his lack of production, his lack of opportunity in Chicago. But in terms of how they feel about it, I think publicly all they're going to say is good for Dylan Strome. You know, we thought maybe that he might be able to figure it out with a change of scenery. But privately, sure, it's got to give you a little bit of discomfort to see the guy producing the way he's producing in Chicago. And it doesn't help the optics when the guy you got in return is just sitting on the sidelines and will be until next season.
Jamie, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still just sitting back listening. No.
You look like you had something really big to say.
No, it's the reality is it's easy to look at trades right away. And again, in the Coyotes' case this year, you've had the two big trades that happened right away, the way Max Domi's producing, the way Dylan Strome's producing, and it's easy to freak out right away. Just freak out and go, okay, they lost the trade. Where was this here? There is a lot of context that goes into it. The part that is at least a little bit concerning on the Dylan Strome side is, one, this kind of was, and again, we need to see it over more than just the sample we've seen it, but if this continues along a similar path for multiple seasons, the big fear was, well, what if he goes somewhere else and then figures it out?
But this is where he would figure it out.
Sure.
It's not like if you traded him to Dallas, he'd be doing this.
But there is something discomforting about him figuring it out there immediately.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue that the Coyotes have is that Schmaltz got hurt. If Schmaltz was still... What, Strome has 30 points in 32 games with Chicago? 35 and 36. 35 points in 36 games after last night because he had three against Ottawa. So Strome has 35 and 36 and Schmaltz had 14 and 17. I mean, if Schmaltz had 28 and 34 games right now, I don't think Coyotes fans would really even care because you're getting the production from Schmaltz.
I think they would just because Dylan Strome was that lightning rod for years here because he was the not McDavid. He was the not Jack Eichel. There was a lot more wrapped up in Dylan Strome's Coyotes career than just the player.
Yeah, stuff
and that's
control.
Not fair to him, but yeah. it's just there's a lot more around it than just him being the player.
Incidentally, too, the numbers, Domi and Galchenyuk, just because you brought up that trade, Domi in the last 25 games, 5 goals, 18 points. Galchenyuk in the last 25 games, 10 goals, 21 points. So similar at this
point. I still think Galchenyuk has a massive upside that we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen
so
in Arizona.
I like what I've seen from Alex Galchenyuk. He's been engaged. He's doing a lot of really good things. I think he's been a very good player lately.
Is it crazy? I've got this question a lot, too. Who's your Coyotes MVP right now? Is it crazy to think Galchenyuk is top two or three at this point? I mean, he might, if he keeps playing like this, may end the year as my team MVP.
I'm going way outside the box on this one. I don't think anybody will pick who I'm picking. My MVP for the team is Nick Chalmerson.
Yeah, right.
You teased
that on the podcast last week. That's something you might happen.
I thought you were going to say like Petteri Nokelainen, and then nobody would have picked that.
No, it's been a few years since they added.
Polkanen.
Yeah.
Well, he prevented them from having to give up an NHL player during the expansion draft, so he served his role.
Yes.
Okay, Chalmerson. That's an interesting call, and I can't really argue against it. You have to look beyond stats, certainly, but.
It's interesting.
Well, when I look at the character of this team, you know, they've relied on timely scoring, obviously, from a different cast of players. That just to give you an example, last night, you know, after every game, the media is asked to request three players to interview after a game. That's how they work it.
Yeah.
The three players we requested after last night's game were Calvin Pickard, Jordan Wheel, and Connor Garland. Three guys who I never imagined talking to in any post-game scrum when the season started. It's just indicative of where they are. But when you look at the character of this team, the identity of this team, to me, what defines this team is they defend really well most nights. And the guy that's doing the best defending on this roster is Nick Chalmerson, and he has been. I mean, this year just feels like a retro year of that guy that I watched for so many years in Chicago. Again, they're noticing it in Chicago as well, noticing how much he would help their blue line right now. He is so good at defending, not only with, you know, the shot blocking. I think he gets a lot of attention for that, but his stick positioning is every bit as good as Michael Grabner's is on the PK. He's so good in his own end. It is a wonder to watch.
If you had to go, I think we all would have gone for MVP. We probably would have gone Grabner before he got hurt, and that was so early in the season.
Yeah.
And then probably even Richardson before he got hurt. But if you had to rattle off like two or three candidates, other than Chalmerson, who are like a couple other guys you're looking at, Craig?
Oh, boy.
Because I honestly, at this point, I think I'd probably go, I'd probably go with OEL, although he hasn't had his best season.
If he keeps it up, I might throw Connor Garland in that mix. If he's scoring goals at this pace for the rest of the year,
yeah.
I know he's only going to end up playing 50-something games, but yeah. I still think that's... I mean, he's in the conversation with Galchenyuk and Jarmerson.
Yeah, he gets 20 goals.
My three guys would have been Galchenyuk, OEL, and Garland, but Jarmerson, you make a real compelling case. And like I said, if Richardson didn't get hurt, he probably would have been the guy. It's really
it could be a bunch of guys.
I don't remember it ever being this difficult to pick a team MVP, and we still have 20 games. But I mean, usually you can narrow it down to one or two guys pretty clearly. But with all the injuries coming to the wrong players, I'd be interested to see how the team vote goes this year.
Another guy we need to talk about, and if he continues to play like he has over the last two and a half weeks or so, I mean, Darcy Kuemper has been a big factor in keeping the Coyotes season alive as well. So
that's fair too, and his numbers are good. Numbers are good. They're well above league average. So, yeah, he's been an important piece. I mean, losing Antti Raanta could have been just an absolute disaster for this team, like it was last year. And that's why they went out and got Darcy Kuemper, because their backup situation was so bad last season, and he's really helped keep them in the race. So that's a fair point to make.
I should point out the Coyotes very much still in this, 3 points back. They can't beat Calgary, and they can't lose to Toronto. That's pretty much – we had some stuff we already knew just reinforced this week since the last time we did the show. Jason Demers, Christian Dvorak. Craig, it sounds like Dvorak's not too far off now.
No, he's going to play tomorrow night in San Diego with the Tucson Roadrunners. How many games he plays beyond that is up for grabs. John Chyka told me he could play 1, 2, 3, 4. They just have to. Basically, he's having his training camp now. That's really what they want to see from him. He's fully healthy. They're not concerned about the pectoral muscle, the surgery anymore. There are no issues with his health. It's just about getting him the reps. And when they think he's ready, he could jump in. I wouldn't be surprised to see him jump back in the lineup when this team comes back from this road trip. And then with Jason Demers, you know, he's skating right now, but I still get the sense it's a pretty good ways off. I think John Chyka termed him week to week at this point. He's got to get a whole lot of skating reps in. He's got to return to practice, contact, all that stuff. So maybe late March, maybe it makes sense to get him a few games near the end of the season. Will the Coyotes still be in it at that point? I don't know, but they're not going to rush that one, absolutely. But on the flip side, I know it means a heck of a lot to Jason Demers. It has since day one that he comes back and plays this season.
They are still just 3 points out of a playoff spot, and they have Edmonton tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday morning, and then they have Vancouver on Thursday. They've been really good on the road, even with the loss to Calgary last night. They're 7-3-1 on the road in the division. So, I mean, if they get the job done against Edmonton, if they get 3 out of 4 points here, I figure still feel pretty good about it. But then they have 7 in a row at home, and they have not been winning games at home. I mean, that stretch coming up, assuming they get through Edmonton and Vancouver with relative success, it's going to be a 7-game home stretch that really defines their season.
Yeah, and I just wrote about this. Gila River Arena has been a sort of a house of horrors for the Coyotes. I went back and looked at it. It's not just the Rick Tocchet years, because they have not played well at home in either of his seasons, but it's the past 5 years. They have the worst home record in the Western Conference over the past 5 years. And look, I know there have been a bunch of theories thrown out, small crowds, bad ice, which is kind of silly because both teams play on it. But I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. Rick Tocchet just told me the other day, he just lies awake at night wondering about it, because it's his job to fix it. And he can't figure it out. They've tried changing the routines. They've tried just about anything they can, but they just can't figure out home ice. And to get to some of those theories, the bad ice one, I think we all can just throw out, because, as I said, both teams play on it. But small crowds, if that's the case, why are there other teams around the league that are low in attendance that are winning on home ice? I don't think you can use that as an excuse either. I don't know what it is about the Coyotes at home.
Maybe they need to start playing duck, duck, goose after the game on the ice.
There you go.
My theory with that has always been, and I didn't realize it was pronounced as you just said over the last, 5 years, but my theory has always been with a younger team, you get on the road, you play a more simplified game, and you just do all the hockey cliches you hear of getting the pucks in deep and chipping along the boards and supporting your teammates and not trying to get too fancy. That stuff always seems easier for a younger team to do on the road, whereas for whatever reason at home, You fall into that trap of trying to do too much or making the extra pass on the power play, or you want to score. It can't just be a goal that you crash the net and it goes off you and in. It's got to be a beautiful goal, which, by the way, Connor Garland's goal against Calgary was ridiculous on Monday.
Backhand.
But at the same time, you have to think at this point in the season that sort of irons out, and that's not as much of a factor. So we'll see on this homestand coming up, because they play Winnipeg and Calgary, who really are the two teams that have had their number for the last couple of years. But other than that, I mean, they play Florida, Vancouver, Detroit, Anaheim, LA, all very winnable games. If they struggle on this homestand, I think it's more of a concern, and that might be it for them. But if they do what they should do on this homestand,
if they beat the teams they should beat,
they're going to go into mid-March, like, right in the middle of this.
Yeah, I mean, where they go 5-2, 4-2-1 on that run. Like, I don't expect them to beat Winnipeg or Calgary. But all those other teams?
Why not?
I don't see why they can't.
Yeah. That Winnipeg game, too, we should mention. That's the Shane Doan. Yeah. The bobblehead and the ceremony for, it sounds like an hour ceremony 2 hours before the game. They're going to retire Shane Doan's number. He's going to be there. A lot of people are going to be.
And it starts at 5 o'clock.
Yes, it does.
It starts at 5 o'clock. Did you see the one in Anaheim where not enough fans got there early? It was like a half empty building. That was a bad look. Coyote fans need to show up earlier and make sure they're in the building by the time the ceremony starts at 5.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, we need to, well, I guess they need to get that word out. And make sure they don't do what Anaheim did. They're doing a better job of it.
They're doing a better job of it. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fairly lengthy ceremony from what I understand, too. So that's why they're doing it
so early. There are a lot of people, man. The list of names coming in for this is impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a fun night. And of course, Shane Doan, friend of the podcast. So
yes.
Figured we should throw that out there as he's been on this show in the past. How about this? Over, under,
ooh,
four Canadian teams make the playoffs this year. I mean, okay.
Let me go through this, okay? Toronto's in.
Yeah.
In the East. Not so sure about Montreal. I don't think Montreal's in. Ottawa is obviously not in. Winnipeg is definitely in.
Yep.
Calgary is definitely in.
Yep.
I'm gonna go with the under.
Yeah, I think under is probably, I mean, if you can't push at four.
Yeah, if I can't push, then yeah, I'll go under.
Because it's not. The only
there won't be five. I'm certain of that.
Okay. I should have said it at 3.5 then.
You're a bad odds maker.
Yeah, this is why I don't work in Vegas. Vancouver, we agree. We're all just sort of writing off. Even though they're right there, they're only a point out.
They've made a good run, but no, they're not ready.
What if I say Vancouver like this? Does that sell you on them?
Not quite.
Okay. Well, I tried. Sorry, Vancouver. Let's see. What else? You guys worried about Vegas at all?
Not about making the playoffs, but of what they're going to do once they get there. I mean, we might be seeing more of what we expected from Vegas when they entered the league. They're still a good team, but I'm not sure the team that's going to do any damage whatsoever in the playoffs this year. They've been scuffling quite a bit here, and especially at home lately, too. They haven't played well on home ice, which is weird. That's been one of their big advantages. I don't know what to make of this team right now, but I don't know. What do you guys think in a matchup with San Jose or Calgary? Who wins that series?
I'm all in on San Jose going to the Western Conference Finals. I've been all in on that all season. I think they are pulling it together. It's just the right time, too. It's not wise to pick against Vegas after what we saw last year. And even this year, I wasn't so sure they were going to make the playoffs. They certainly are. But they could always win a series. I just don't see them as a threat to get past the second round this year.
I still think they're the third best team in the Pacific.
They've also
I don't think they're better than Calgary or San Jose.
And they've ridden Marc-Andre Fleury like into the ground this year. He plays every game.
And he's doing the best he can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's a concern. That's absolutely a concern when you get to the postseason.
By the way, this is apropos of nothing, but as I'm looking over like different stats, I thought this was interesting. Since that, you know, we talked a lot about the 3-on-3 overtime rules over the course of the several years they've been doing it now. Do you know, even this late in the season, there are three teams that have not been in a shootout this year and three teams that have only been in one shootout.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The Coyotes haven't been in very many shootouts this year.
Coyotes have been, where are they? They have been in three.
Four? Okay.
Right now, Dallas hasn't been in a shootout this year. Toronto hasn't been in a shootout and Ottawa hasn't been in a shootout.
Well, Ottawa, I mean.
Who has the most?
Let's see. The most, well, Islanders have 8 so far. Let me see if they think.
Wow, that's a lot.
The Rangers have 8. Something about New York.
Yeah.
I imagine that's going to be, yep, that's it. So the two New York teams have 8.
Has Ottawa even gotten into overtime in a game yet this year?
I believe they have. I think they literally did it like...
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah. That Sharks-Bruins overtime, by the way, did anybody watch that last night at like 11 o'clock?
Yeah.
That was outstanding.
Yeah, I did. There were two crazy games in the NHL last night. That one in the Chicago-Ottawa game on the other end of the good spectrum.
Should we be concerned about ourselves that we all watched the Coyotes-Flames game, obviously, yesterday afternoon, and then we watched Chicago-Ottawa, and then we independently watched San Jose-Boston as well?
So I was on in my hotel room, and I had to do a radio spot. So.
Oh, okay.
So of course you did.
Yeah. Oh, but for me, it was for work, so I'm sure that's the only reason I watched. That San Jose-Boston game in overtime, you hear so much about how 3-on-3 overtime is about possessing the puck. Those two teams just threw it out the window. Like, they just got the puck and fired it on goal over and over and over again, and there was two on nuns the other way. It was outstanding.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a fun night in the NHL.
And some listener
questions. Do we want to get to some listener questions? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, look at us on the same page.
1,700 miles away, Luke.
Well, 1,700?
Yeah.
How many kilometers?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Somebody in Canada. Craig, how many kilometers?
Metrics?
Let's start with Eldon, who writes in for Craig. Favorite?
Oh, boy.
And this one out.
I feel like we've had a variation of this question before, but it's
the audience.
It's always one of my favorite questions, and I never remember Craig's answer. Favorite and least favorite arenas to visit in the league on road trips? Hometown Chicago doesn't count. Yeah, I'm with Eldon on that one. I don't want to hear you talk about Chicago.
Let's see. Put me on the spot here.
Yes.
I think Detroit is the best arena I've seen.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily certain that I want to visit Detroit, but it is a beautiful arena.
Okay.
In terms of places I want to go, arenas that happen to be in cities I want to visit. And I have to throw out Chicago. Okay. Let's go with Vancouver. Let's go with Boston. Madison Square Garden in L.A. How's that for four options?
Yeah, that works. That's good. It's good. Good answers right off the top of your head right there. I'm trying.
Thank you. Least favorite? Probably the one I was in yesterday. Not a great arena. And I also hate the San Jose press box. It's the worst press box in the league.
Wow. All right, then.
Okay.
Let's see. Kevin writes in, what's the price for – this one is for Jamie. For Jesse Puljujärvi, would he look good in a Yotes uniform, or where do you see him by next season?
The Jesse Puljujärvi stuff is just...
That wasn't just for Jamie, but he didn't like specify that, but we're letting Jamie start.
I don't see a fit with the Coyotes. The Coyotes don't have a track record of turning around failed skilled wingers before. And we spent the whole time talking about guys that have liked that they have traded away. I think the price is going to be too high for anybody. I don't think he moves at the deadline. I think there's clinging to some hope that he can be a top six forward for them effectively. I just haven't seen anything like that since he's turned pro. Like, I don't really know what to make of him.
Yeah, if I'm Edmonton, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's going to turn it around there either, but your best bet may just be to hope he does turn it around, because what are you going to get back for him unless you get another failed prospect that you think you can turn around?
Yeah, I mean...
He's a devalued asset right now.
Yeah. Maybe in the off season, I don't see it. I think if he has any chance of being a top six forward, you stick it out and see what happens.
Jamie looks exhausted, tired, and disappointed anytime we talk about Edmonton at this point, which I'm assuming is how everybody around you in Edmonton looks right now, Craig.
Yeah, it is a sad state of affairs here.
Thomas writes in, I found the best Maple Leafs jersey in the world. The guy had a number 19 jersey with cap space written on the back. That's funny. Mm. That's pretty solid.
So how many dollars they're going to have left next year? 19?
Yes. Let's see. Mike writes in, when can we judge Clayton Keller? People talk about him like he's going to be Patrick Kane, but I don't know. ...
He's not going to be Patrick Kane, nor is he ever going to be.
No,
Patrick
he's not
Kane.
Going to be Patrick Kane. But there's plenty of room for growth because of his age still. And I did a story on this recently comparing his early years to Johnny Gaudreau's and Patrick Kane's. And surprisingly, they compare pretty well in terms of production, which even surprised me when I started looking into it. I think the things that we need to say, look, Clayton Keller's never going to be a great defensive player, but he needs to be a better defensive player than on plays like Mark Giordano's goal yesterday.
He needs to try.
He was just waving his magic wand of a stick from afar at Gio and not really doing anything else defensively, not moving his feet, most notably. he has to be better than that in his own zone, and he has to, you know, make smarter decisions with the puck. But I think there's upside still, and I think the chance to play with skill guys would help him. We saw, you know, a very brief look at what he could do with a skill player when Nick Schmaltz was here, but there's some promise there. So let's hold off on that judgment with the caveats I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We still haven't seen a prolonged run with Clayton Keller playing with other skill players on his line for a prolonged period of time and them clicking. Again, I don't think he's ever going to be Patrick Kane, but there are a lot of really, 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 really good hockey players in the league that aren't Patrick Kane.
I'm not even sure Mitch Marner is ever going to be Patrick Kane, and Marner's really good.
So, I mean, but so I don't think, I know that comparison's been made since before he was drafted, but they're different players. But I'm with you, Craig. I want to see how he plays with comparable to his own skill on his line for a long period of time before we can really judge what type of a player he can really be.
The Schmaltz argument is a good point to bring up. Again, it's the second time on the show for different reasons. We are wishing Nick Schmaltz wasn't hurt. But, I mean, Keller right now doesn't give you much of anything defensively, but when he was playing with Schmaltz, he was producing offensively. And if you're not going to do anything defensively, you need to be an offensive machine. And he hasn't been that this season. The Coyotes aren't really built in such a way where anybody has been an offensive machine. But when Schmaltz was there, those two, they were clicking pretty quickly. And right now, I mean, right now the only guy on offense with the Coyotes that you look at and you're like, okay, well, he's going to do something tonight is probably Galchenyuk. And even that wasn't the case in the first half of the season, which leads into Joe's question. Does Tockett finally get some praise from the Coyotes fan base for keeping such a bandaged team or banged up team in the playoff race? Obviously, he'll say nothing has happened yet, but it seems like he deserves some props for the season they've had so far. I mean,
I think he already is getting some of that attention. Pierre LeBrun wrote a column about that, you know, about him getting some Jack Adams love because of what he's done in light of all the injuries. So I think some people are taking notice, maybe not certain writers in Vancouver, but I think most people are taking notice of what the Coyotes are accomplishing with their injuries. And I think it's warranted. You know, when you have this many key players out of the lineup and you manage to stay in the playoff race, albeit a diminished playoff race, your coach and your leadership group deserve some credit for that.
I did an interview the other day where they asked me if ownership was happy with Rick Tockett.
Oh, so now you're cheating on us too now?
Yes, but it was a radio interview. It wasn't a podcast, so it's okay. And I don't know what more Rick Tockett could do. I understand you can look at him and you can be critical, I guess, of the fact that they've moved on from some young players, but they are 3 points out of a playoff spot with 50% of their roster missing for most of the season. If they make the playoffs and he is not a finalist for the Jack Adams, the people who are voting are not watching. They're only watching their teams. I mean, I'm not saying he should win because Barry Trotz has already won the award, but he should at least be a finalist if they make the playoffs because this is remarkable what he's done.
Can we go a step further here and talk about some of the people who ask about whether ownership is happy with Tockett or if John Chyka is on safe ground? To me, when I hear those questions or that speculation from outside media, I think how little they really understand about the Coyotes organization. At this point, I don't think there's anybody in a position to evaluate either one of those guys that's going to say bye-bye at this point. We know what's happening on the ownership front with this team. They're in transition right now. The league is working actively to find someone to buy this team from Andy Barraway. So to say that Andy Barraway is going to turn around and fire John Chyka, I just don't even think that's remotely possible. I'm not sure it's warranted. You can look at the Strome and Domi things if you want, but there's a lot else on his track record to suggest that he's done some good things. And just beyond that, though, right now I don't think that evaluating the GM's performance is at the top of the list of ownership right now. They're trying to sell the team, and that's where most of their efforts are right now.
But even those two trades we keep talking about, I mean, the jury's far from out on those. Those are fairly even trades.
And again, we have to look at this in different boxes, and I know it's so easy to lump it together, especially for the Coyotes fan base, because you've been witnesses to all of it together. You have to remember that the end of the Coyotes coming down from the peak Dave Tippett years, John Chyka wasn't the GM. You can't blame the losses from 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 4 years ago on the current regime. And I know it's tough to sometimes separate that when everything is going on and they just kind of roll and roll and roll and roll on top of each other. And now you're looking at more than a half decade of this. But this is not all John Chyka. It's not all Rick Tockett. I mean, you have to be able to move things around, and you have to understand that you're not going to see returns, major returns, from John Chyka drafts within 1 or 2 years.
It's like we just talked about with the nuance of those two big trades that occurred this year. A big part of that is Rick Tocchet and this system, and I don't think people on the outside really understand that. I've had a lot of people ask me, well, how do you think John Chyka, you know, how do you grade him on signing Alex Goligoski? Well, Dave Tippett was an executive in the organization at that point above John Chyka, and that was a big Dave Tippett move there. I don't think people understand that either. There's a lot of nuance to this stuff that I just don't think people understand about this organization.
I don't understand any criticism of Chyka yet. I mean, again, we sit here and most of the moves he's made, I like. The only moves he's made that are questionable, sometimes you make trades that are questionable. We're 3 months into a couple trades that are like 50-50 or 52-48 right now. That's not reason to freak out over the GM. I think a lot of it is to Jamie's point, Chyka gets blamed for the fact that the Coyotes haven't made the playoffs since 2012. He hasn't been the GM since 2012. What he has done, 65% of the roster he has built is in playoff contention right now. Real quick, I just want to go over some of these Stanley Cup odds. Washington, this is from Vegas, so they Jamie knows this. Vegas just does it based on what's going to make them the most money. They have Washington as the number 11 team in the NHL right now.
That's low, but I guess I get it. Like, they're not winning the cup, but that feels low. What are the actual odds on that?
Oh, I don't know.
Read me the numbers, Luke.
Plus 2,000.
Okay, so 20-1. Okay,
but just in terms of ranking, though, having them 11th. I mean, some of the teams they have in front of them, I also don't think are going to win the cup.
There aren't 10 teams I think that should have better odds.
Vegas?
That wasn't English, but whatever.
No, it wasn't, but I just wanted to talk over you anyway. Pittsburgh, who's 1 point out of missing the playoffs. Boston.
Well, yeah.
And the Islanders.
Boston's a better team, I think, but they have a much, much, much tougher path.
None of us think the Capitals are going to win the Stanley Cup again because it's really tough to go back-to-back.
I'm not going to argue that the Islanders shouldn't have better odds. I said that they're going to win the division and go to the conference final.
If somebody told me, hey, one of these teams is winning the Cup this year, though, the Islanders or the Capitals, I'm going to take the Capitals. The Islanders aren't winning the Cup.
No, but they're going to win that division.
But it's not to bet on who's better. It's who's going to win the Cup. Also, Toronto is fourth on this list. They're not even... I would have had them second.
I'm assuming Tampa, Winnipeg, Nashville, Toronto. Is that the top four?
Tampa, Calgary, San Jose, Toronto.
Really?
Calgary.
Wow. That's number two.
Calgary's second.
Yeah.
That's surprising to me.
I don't see it with them. And when I see them up close,
I think Calgary's the fourth best team in the West.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe fifth, depending on St. Louis. I mean,
yeah.
Right now,
yeah, depending on what the Blues do.
Yeah,
the
I mean, I don't like those odds.
Yeah, I don't get that with.
What's St. Louis on there?
They don't defend well.
What's St. Louis on there? Just out of curiosity,
I'm trying to. Well, St. Louis is plus 2,500, but that has them 13th. They have St. Louis behind Montreal. Again, I'll take St. Louis to win the Cup this year over Montreal. Real quick before we wrap up, anything else in the trade deadline? We didn't hit that real hard. Is there any Coyotes in danger of moving or any names that are not Panarin, Stone, or Duchesne around the league that you think may move?
Yeah, I mean, there are some other names. I don't know how exciting that is, but in terms of the Coyotes, yeah. Well, let's wait and see what happens in these next two games. It could come down to that, but I don't think the names that I would throw out are any surprise to people. When you look at guys on expiring contracts like a Richard Ponick, who should return to the lineup tonight, he's a guy that they could move. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I don't think he's ever been a big Rick Tocchet favorite. And then other guys like, you know, depending on the return for him, a guy like Jordan Oesterle, who's on an expiring contract. I think there's been some interest in Nick Cousins, and he's had a quietly decent season. He could be a guy who could help your bottom six with some underrated skill, some decent speed, and some grit to his game. So those could be guys to watch.
That's a good point you bring up, too. These next two games could mean a lot. The trade deadline's the 25th. The Coyotes have three games before then. They've got Edmonton, Vancouver on the road, and then Winnipeg at home. But when you are this close, because those last two names you rattled off, Nick Cousins and Jordan Oesterle, are both pretty big reasons why the Coyotes have been producing lately. I mean, Oesterle has been a machine offensively over the last couple weeks, really since the All-Star break. So
I'd be careful with him. Yeah. A young defenseman, you like to have those in your system. He's been a nice pickup for them.
Yeah. And that's why these next few games are so big. If you keep winning and you're still within, what, 2-3 points of a playoff spot, then you don't want to send a message to your locker room if we're going to move a guy like Osterley or even Cousins out. But you got to keep winning to be in it. Otherwise, you got to maximize your return. This is a big week for not just for the Coyotes, but specifically for them, since that's who we're talking about.
Yep.
All right. I believe that's it. Craig, you're going to be here next week? You are, right?
I am, yeah. They're on that long homestand, so finally get back home for a while.
You're not considering moving to Edmonton because you love the weather so much?
I am definitely not considering that. By the way, we got a couple of late listener questions. I don't know if you want to ignore those, Luke, because that's what you do, or if you want to get to those.
Hold on. I'm scrolling through all the sewer fights references, which, by the way, nothing makes me happier than good sewer fight references on here. Pat, why isn't Lyubushkin in the lineup every night?
I just think that's because he's a young defenseman, and there are times where they like to pull him back, let him watch a little bit, let him. It's almost like video, right? You stand up, you sit up in the press box, you watch the game a little bit. They give you things to keep an eye on, and that's just part of the growth process, I think, for a young defenseman. But they like his arc so far. They like what he's done for them.
What did you think of that game against Toronto? That defensive effort from the Coyotes that Oof, you know he was
terrific.
A part of.
Yeah, I like it when you know he. I don't want to make too much of this because I think people look at that and say, oh, that's what's missing. But
no.
When he brings a physical element, I think he's more engaged in the game. And I would not want to meet that guy in the corner because he is a rock. I'm sure you guys have seen him. He's a big dude. And when he hits, when he comes at someone, he can knock them flat. And that's an intimidating presence back there. But the thing that I think been surprised a little bit about Lyubushkin is he's more mobile than I thought he would be. And that really helps in today's game. You can't have... Forgive me for saying it, but you can't have a Luke Shen back there.
Yeah. Yeah, he has been mobile. You have to feel really good about the Coyotes' blue line because I think most of us felt good about it coming into this season, and you didn't really know what you were going to get out of Osterley and Lyubushkin. But if you keep this same group together heading towards next year, and I don't think we're going to see Pierre-Olivier Joseph next year, are we? So, I mean, you're still looking...
No, I think he'll be in Tucson next year.
Yeah. And maybe he's a midseason call-up or whatever if they need somebody, but it's not...
I'm curious what happens with Goligoski, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if teams come calling, I don't know that anybody's going to want him with 2 years left on his deal, but if they come calling, I wouldn't be surprised if the Coyotes moved him out, and I think they'd be okay moving Jacob Chychrun up into more minutes next season.
They've got good depth, and a guy like Lyubushkin, who is so different from everybody else on that blue line, like they have pieces they can move in and out. And clearly, Tocchet wanted to play a more physical game against Toronto the other night, and it worked. So it's nice to be able to pull him in, and then, like you said, Craig, pull him out for a few games and let him sort of reevaluate what he's doing and develop and everything. Last one from Coach East Jack. I think Fisher should be scoring more. What do you think the problem is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've wondered the same thing recently. He's in another one of his slumps. And look, Fish's game is he's got to get to the net. He's got to be that net front presence. He's got to be a guy who creates his offense from the corners, and it just hasn't happened for him. You know, maybe some of this is just being a young player, being inconsistent, but they need more from him. And I know that's a project really close to Rick Tocchet's heart because he loves Fish. He plays a similar style of game that Tocchet played when he was here. That's a project that they've got to get on. They've got to get more from Christian Fisher than they've been getting offensively recently.
The way they've done this over the last month or so, where it really, you know, you said it last night after the game, you guys were talking to Jordan Wheel, Connor Garland, and Calvin Pickard. It is a different two or three players every night. We think that's sustainable for another month and a half?
I don't know. I at this point with this team, I hesitate to say. Yeah, I think they're finally out of it because every time I think that, then they win a few games and they're right back in the mix. I don't know how they're doing it. I really don't know how they're doing it with the roster they're trotting out there, but they are doing it.
And they've still got a game in hand on Chicago and Vancouver, who are both 2 points ahead of the Coyotes right now. That, I believe, is it. I had something else really important to say, but I can't remember what it was.
I don't believe that.
Jamie, do you have something nice to say for once?
Nice to say? No.
Dude, that was hurtful and rude.
I don't have anything nice to say.
All right, that's going to do it for us then. For Craig Morgan in Edmonton, for Jamie Eisner, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.
I mean, you were really rooting for that 4th Thornton goal on Monday.
No.